Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 82 of Classic Elite. And this week, I'll be hosting, and my name is Scott, and I am joined by Vogue Nasty. What's going on, man?
Same old man, just ready to talk about some video games.
Don't sound so depressed, man.
Yeah, we're both a little run down, so our apologies to our audience. We're just, I guess we got a case of the Mondays on Wednesday.
A little bit. But luckily, to save our butts, we had an amazing interview that we did last weekend, and it was with Paul Taylor of Mode 7 Games. And you may know Mode 7 Games from making Frozen Synapse, which is a really popular indie game. They even made their own Humble Bundle over it. But we also brought Paul on because he's an amazing musical artist and makes a lot of fake-bit music and just got done with the Blip Festival. So we'll have a really exciting and awesome interview to share with you guys to kind of save Dustin and I from having a case of the Wednesdays. But, yeah, before we get going, we need to remind everybody that you can get $25 in Jinx Gold with the promo code CELITE over at DoghouseSystems.com. Time to level up with a Doghouse Gaming Rig. Also, with J2Games.com, you get 20% off your entire purchase with the same promo code. There's also, what, Dustin, 1 week left in our Mass Effect 3 giveaway?
Roundabout, and it almost hit 500 today.
Holy crap, really?
Yeah.
Wow, so we have about 500 entries. I guess that's worldwide in the Mass Effect 3 giveaway, so... hopefully somebody that we know will win. That'd be pretty cool. So, Dustin, do you have any announcements before we jump into the news?
Don't think so. We do have also another interview. It'll be next episode with Epic Vessel Games, the guys who made Potion Master.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'll be getting into Potion Master a little bit later this episode, right?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So the first thing that I wanted to bring up in the world of video game entertainment is the Game Chasers put out episode 1 of season 2 today on Retroware TV. Did you see this at all by chance?
I haven't seen the first episode, no.
No, it's...
I've watched their bunch of stuff out of their last season.
Yeah, it's a bunch of the same. It's their road trip to MAGFest is part 1 of the... this series that he's going to put out to begin the season. So that'll be pretty cool. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really, really funny. It wasn't as much on the game chasing as much as the hilarious side of game chasing, you know, versus finding the actual games, but it was awesome. I loved it. So, yeah, wanted to give a quick shout out to Billy and Jay for coming on our show as well. Episode 61. Of Classically, we did an interview with them. So if you haven't listened to that, you should do that. I was quite a while ago already. I can't believe it. It's like 20 episodes ago. Wild. You weren't even a regular podcaster with us yet.
I was not. I haven't even had my guest spot yet.
Really?
No.
Holy crap. Because it feels like you've been around for a while now. So holy crap. Good deal. Well, what do you have next on the docket here for the news?
This is a lady by the internet handle Kitty McScratch. You can see her stuff at kittymcscratch.com. But her real name is Liz Bollinger, and she is trying to set a Guinness World Record and also turn it into a charity event by playing, I think it is... Yes, Dance Central 2 for 24 hours straight.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Like, I've done 24-hour gaming marathons, but the most energetic thing I've done is, like, get off the couch to get a Red Bull or something. So to play, like, a dance game for an entire day straight is – it's probably borderline dangerous. So,
well, good luck to her.
Yeah.
It's kind of reminding me – you don't watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia, do you?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay. Well, for any of our listeners, this reminds me of in like season 2 when the gang has a dance off. So anyways, man, you really gotta catch up on your comedies, man.
Is that on Netflix?
I don't know.
I'll check it out if it is.
Yeah. If not, I will find a way to get you some episodes.
Sweet.
So yeah, good deal. I guess what's her website? It is kittymcscratch.com.
Yep.
Okay, and Did you do much research? Does she have a particular goal in mind or anything like that?
She has a chip-in charity widget for $500. And this is all going to Child's Play.
Mm-hmm.
But she also already has other Guinness World Record. She's most prolific dancing game high scorer in the Guinness World Records.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
So it's not just like a, she's actually good at the game. It's not just kind of like a shtick.
Yeah, correct.
Sweet. Very cool.
Apparently she's going to live stream it, so you can come chat with her and donate and all that good stuff.
So everyone's dogging on the Kinect. See, it's nice to have the voice chat now. Not really. But cool, man.
And next up, we got a new Amalur DLC. March 20th is when it's slated. It's coming with a new epic new quest line, enemies, dungeons, items, all kinds of stuff. So it doesn't sound like a horse armor or something. So it's good to see developers actually put effort in their what they offer after the game is released. Usually it's at least for the first release, it's usually kind of half-baked. Like even Bethesda, when they did Fallout 3, the first DLC that they did was kind of like an arena kind of. It didn't have much in way of story, but it was just a lot of action, which gotcha. Is kind of funny because Fallout 3 wasn't that great when it came to action.
Well, but, so you said it's new Amalur DLC. Have they already had some DLC?
No, I was just...
Okay.
Yeah, it should be, first story-driven downloadable content, March 20th. Okay, cool.
Yeah, since I haven't been following the game at all, I didn't want to assume that this was like the second round or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. And did you hear anything about how that game came to be? Like, what's his name? Kurt Schilling, the baseball player?
Yeah, I knew that he was involved. Like, he's like a major stakeholder in the company, or he's like the majority owner or something like that in the company that made it, right?
Yeah, he pretty much made the company so that they can make him games. Yeah, that's pretty much what he did. He went around and said, well, okay, I like the combat in God of War, so put that in there. And, well, you know, Bethesda games are good, so put in a whole big world. And
that's fun.
Also, that's how they got like Todd McFarlane and R.A. Salvatore, because he's like Buku Rich from playing baseball.
Gosh, I didn't realize Kurt Schilling was such a big gamer. He's a very opinionated guy that, is pretty famous for the Bloody Sock and the championship series against the Yankees. But I never would have expected that he's like, you know what, I'm just going to have a game developed.
I guess he's like the greatest undercover nerd ever.
That's awesome. He's like, I'm picturing like Jay Leno is like this big car, like nerd aficionado, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Kurt Schilling's just like, gosh, I'm going to get my own game studio, which I think I would explore if I was so ridiculously rich.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
If games made to order, they'd be awesome.
Just ask one of your favorite developers. Like, hey, that'd be awesome. So I guess what else is there in that downloaded package? Is it just that quest, or is there anything else with it?
I think it's new enemies, new items, new dungeons, 18 unique weapons.
Now, when they do DLC in a game this big, is that common to add enemies? And is it only available in the new quest, or do they start showing up throughout the game if you'd replayed in like Hero Plus or whatever? Or game Plus?
That's a good question. I'm not sure about like when it'll show up. Usually when they do DLC, it is like for open world games, it'll kind of open up right away, and they usually scale the enemy's levels to your level, so you don't end up like going there and getting completely wiped out because you're underpowered.
Oh, okay.
And usually developers try to reuse assets, so for them to actually come up with new enemies is kind of a big deal, yeah.
Sweet. Well, then if it is, then they probably would incorporate it if you're going to play through. Of course, it's appropriate in the story, but that's cool, man. Yeah, I guess I'm glad to see major content coming out that you could purchase. What else do we have next on the docket?
I just wanted to point out that SSX finally came out, and it's got pretty good reviews so far. As I watched Game Trailer's review, and it was like an 8.2, which is pretty good for them. Like that sounds like kind of mediocre by most standards, but the really good games end up getting like a 9.2 or 9.3, so it's pretty good for a game that is not really a AAA title. I've heard that the single player is pretty minimal, but the multiplayer is where it's at, and that's where you're going to get most of the meat of the game. So I guess that would be a major concern if you were if you didn't have internet, if you weren't playing online.
Did you ever get into the SSX series much?
No, I don't think I've ever played one.
I didn't. I did a little bit. It was one of the first games I'd ever played, actually, on a PS2. I remember when I was in high school, my buddy and I took a road trip to go stay with his brother for the weekend at college, which was a pretty fun time. But they had a PS2 there, and it was brand new. I'd never even seen one before, and SSX, or it was a snowboarding game, so I'm assuming it was SSX. It was one of the first things I ever played.
Yeah, it probably was.
There was a game for Xbox that was snowboarding related. Maybe it was called Shreddin' or something like. No, that was an NES game. Heavy. I can't remember. There was a snowboarding game for original Xbox I played a lot in college. That was really fun. My roommate had it. Crap, I can't remember what it is.
Was it Amped?
No. Oh, maybe it was. Yeah, actually, I'm pretty sure it was Amped.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. So. Yeah, I never get real into those games, but I did enjoy SSX, and I did enjoy Amped, and I do remember being blown away in 1080, snowboarding on the 64, how you would leave a track, you know, like in the snow. It felt like so satisfying to like carve out a path. So that's cool that it's another good game.
And last on the thing is Star Wars The Old Republic. It finally got released in Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, and Singapore. I just thought it was really interesting.
Is there a political holdup or something? Like, why is it just not coming out?
I'm not sure. Maybe, I don't know. What the press release I got doesn't say anything about it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if there was, like, some ongoing story that I'd been missing about it.
Maybe it was, localization.
Oh, okay. Well, even in Australia, though?
That makes sense. Well, Hong Kong and Singapore, maybe, but
yeah.
Australia and New Zealand, maybe just getting servers up?
Yeah, maybe. I know that Kaiser sometimes has talked about having bandwidth restrictions there, so maybe that's what it was. So that's cool that more people are getting it around the world, though. I know Gooch liked it. Richie Branson, he made the mixtape about it, which... Actually, have you been following Richie's news the last couple of weeks since he's been on the show?
Not over the last couple of days. What happened?
His, he put out I think as of now, two songs off his Gundam mixtape. And it's catching some really, really nice traction in the anime, community, online. Just want to say what's up to Richie and, wish you a lot of luck on the Gundam mixtape. The two songs I've heard have been awesome. I was never into anime growing up so I was never into the Gundam series, but I still can relate to coming home and watching something after school and relate to the subject matter that he talks about. So very, very cool.
I have heard Wing Memories, and that was really, really good.
Yo, yo, it's your boy Richie Branson, the evil villainous bastard, and you're listening to the Classic League Podcast. Let's go.
Let's talk about what we've been playing.
The very short list of what we've been playing.
So you first, man.
Alright, I've been playing Potion Master. We were lucky enough to get contacted by Epic Vessel Games, and they hooked us up with a copy of their already released title, and that is Potion Master. It's a match 3 kind of game, kind of like a would be a good analog of Bejeweled or something around those lines.
Bejeweled, Pop-It, Columns type game.
But it has kind of a twist, almost like a, what's that DS game? Nah, never mind. It'll take me forever to remember it. Where you can utilize, you have spells that you can use and it will, they act as power-ups where you can knock out like entire columns of potions.
Oh, nice.
They'll have, what else? They have like a monetary system set up so you can go to a shop and purchase power-ups that you can also get through linking really long combos. And it's for the PC and really low system requirements, so it'd probably work on just about anything.
Nice.
And yeah, it was really good. You can see my review of it on YouTube. The YouTubans.
Is that pretty much all you've been playing the last week or two?
That and Resonance.
Resonance, yeah. Unfortunately for me, I'm kind of in the same boat. Before I get to talking about the 3DS stuff I've been playing, Tony actually came into town this weekend, which was great. I haven't seen him in a while. And we got to hang out for a couple hours, and he brought his Vita with him, which was pretty sweet. So we got to check out Uncharted, which looks unbelievable. Dustin, have you played around with the Vita yet at all?
I haven't.
No, it's really, really neat. Rayman Origins is, of course, incredible. Everybody already knows that. There was a game called, like, Monster Blobs from Outer Space or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really awesome game. It's a side-scrolling platformer, and it's 2D, and it utilizes almost like a Metal Storm from the NES sort of mechanic or a VVVV mechanic. But instead of flipping to have your character's gravity go all the way down or all the way up, you can actually create magnetic fields and you can make it a positive or a negative sort of field. And what's cool about that is you can attract yourself or propel yourself away from certain objects, and it makes for a really awesome mix of puzzle and platforming, which are, you know, as I've talked about on the show, pretty much my favorite genres. So, yeah, I was really impressed with the Monster Blobs from Space, and Rayman's gorgeous. I can't believe how nice the screen looks, and it is a big system. I know that all the reviews out there have commented on the size. It's really darn big, but one of the things that Tony showed me as a major design flaw with it, and I haven't watched a lot of reviews, so I don't know if this has been talked about a lot, but he was showing me that, like, the way that the speakers are placed next to the analog sticks, His thumbs get in the way of the speakers and cut out a lot of the sound.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's really, really strange the way where they put the speakers. It felt like they could have put it maybe somewhere a little different. But other than that, I mean, the system's awesome. Once they stop acknowledging, or once they stop pretending that they're, like a cost-effective system, and they're like, look, we have a lot of awesome stuff available, just go get it. Yes, it's expensive. Once they go that way with it, it'll start to do a lot better, because it's an impressive thing to hold. It's really cool. So yeah, I got to play around with the Vita a little bit. And then I have been doing some more purchasing of stuff in the eShop, and I was really, really disappointed. Now, I guess I should have looked into this a little more, but not all NES games that are purchasable on the Nintendo eShop are 3D classics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really pissed off about Super Mario Brothers. I assumed it was a 3D classic.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what, I will pay $5 to play old school Mario in 3D. Yeah, I'll do it. And no, I was really disappointed when I opened it up and it was the original Mario Brothers.
Oh, like, man. Yeah, that sucks. Yeah.
Like, this sucks. Oh, well. You live and learn. So Nintendo, you got me. But I did, because I was so desperate to play a 3D classics game, I did download Kirby's Adventure, and I realized I've never beaten that game before, so I'm pretty pumped to go through that, and it looks gorgeous. I will probably be buying most of the games that are 3D classics. I know that it's going to be overpaying for some of these games, but they look so good that I think I'll buy a few games just so that Nintendo sees that someone's buying them. So, But Kirby's Dream Land Kirby's Adventure, I'm sorry, is really good. It's a lot of fun. I've still been playing Mario 3D Land. Not really so much of Mario Kart 7, even though that's still a really good game. And then, I've been playing Resonance of Fate quite a bit, and I know that you have. We haven't really talked about it on the show, and I don't know. I guess we'll hold off for a couple of weeks, but you and I really should have like a nice segment on Resonance of Fate sometime.
Yeah.
But I guess one thing I'm going to mention about it is there's a couple little things that have gotten in my way early on in the game that have not crept up again. And I've started to really enjoy the battle system. It's starting to become a fairly fun RPG to play. It's not as demanding or daunting as I thought it was going to be, or as complicated as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I just got to a point where I can really air juggle really efficiently with the tri-attack.
Oh, once I really got my arms around how to do the tri-attack really efficiently, I mean, it opens up the game a lot. All of a sudden, the battle is dependent on you being able to almost solve a puzzle, and using some brute force as well. And that to me is really, really nice. And, the music's great and the graphics and the battle system are good. So it's been, it's satisfying the way everybody jumps. I have to jump every time I do an attack. I don't know if that's dumb or not. Do you do that?
Say what?
Do you go airborne, every time you sprint at somebody?
Depending, I know that a lot of the time when you jump, it will attack all the different gauges at once randomly. So a lot of the times, like if you're using your scratch damage person,
yeah,
it will, it's more efficient that way.
Yeah.
But, sometimes I do catch myself just accidentally jumping just because.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool when you do jump. The animation of it's really awesome.
Yeah.
So, Resonance of Fate, if anybody wants to check out our full thoughts, right now we've got two episodes out, Max XP that we'll get to here in a little bit. So that's pretty much all that we have this week. So Dustin, let's get to our interview with Paul.
Sounds
now,
good,
I've got to admit, I'm a little embarrassed. I dropped the wrong track name during the interview of, the song that reminded me of Radiohead, and he was very polite and not correcting me, but saying, I don't think that's the one you're thinking of. So, Paul, I appreciate that. Anyways, without further ado, let's get to the interview with Paul Taylor of Mode 7 Games, also known as Ensnare. All right, everyone, and welcome back to the interview segment of episode 82. And we are so excited today, as we just mentioned, we have Paul Taylor from Mode 7 Games on. A lot of our listeners are going to be very familiar with Mode 7 because they're responsible for Frozen Synapse, the wildly popular indie game. And I'll be honest, I actually reached out to Paul because I'm such a big fan of his music. So we'll actually be talking a lot about the music that Paul's created. So we have Dustin joining the interview and Paul. Paul, what's going on, man?
Hey, how are you doing? It's really great to be here. It's nice to do a music-related interview, so that's cool.
Well, sorry to put a wrench in the spokes just yet, because I'm going to have you talk about Mode 7 a little bit. Can you tell just a brief history of the start of Mode 7 and kind of what the state of things are with the company today?
Sure thing. Well, Mode 7 was started by my business partner, Ian Hardingham, who's our lead designer and programmer, and he started it straight out of university in around about sort of 2005 to work on a sword fighting game that we made called Determinants. And I actually got involved sort of round about that time doing music for Determinants, and then decided to work with Ian on building up the business. And from there, we kind of built up. We added another employee, Robin Cox, who's a level designer and tester. And we released Frozen Synapse last year, which is our second game. And we've just got a new member of our team, James Hannett. So we're up to four people in the office now. And yeah, we make indie games, mostly sort of PC, Mac, Linux at the moment, but we're looking at doing iPad and other things in the future and just kind of on this fairly crazy ride and seeing where it takes us.
Cool. With Frozen Synapse, can you tell us, where did the idea of the game start? How long was the development? What was the first hint that you had something like blowing up on you?
Sure. So the impetus for Frozen Synapse really came from an older game called Laser Squad Nemesis, which was created by the creators of the XCOM series. And Ian played a lot of that game in around about 2004 with a guy called Tom, one of our friends, and they were kind of play these extensive sessions of it. And Ian always felt that there was some way that you could improve it, because in that kind of game, it takes a really long time to get into an interesting situation. So the first bit of inspiration he had for Frozen Synapse was really, what if you could make a randomly generated situation and then just play from there? Would that be sort of the same? So the idea really was to start making a kind of Laser Squad Nemesis, sort of derivative game. And we started that in round about 2007. And quickly kind of, we tried a few different things out and Ian brought a few different things into play. He wanted that kind of Counter-Strike-esque feeling of being able to predict your opponent's moves and kind of outwit them. So that came in at that point. I think the first time that we really knew when we had something good was when we were playing the prototype in the office. And we had an intern at the time and he was playing against Robin and they were kind of battling it out and it got down to like the last two guys and it was really tense and everyone was sort of laughing, joking around. And, you know, as soon as someone died, like just this huge kind of, ooh, kind of went out around the office. And that, you know, even at prototype, you know, if you're having that kind of reaction, then there's something there. And yeah, we managed to kind of convey that stick to our guns sort of throughout development. It took about 4 years on and off to get it done. But we managed to kind of get that feeling out in the end, I think.
The game has been, as Justin mentioned, really popular. And you guys were actually included with your own humble bundle, the Frozen Bundle.
That's right. Yeah.
That's in itself very, very amazing. There have been the best of the best in indie games have been available in those. So to get your own is really impressive. Can you tell a little bit about the experience with Humble Bundle and then the impact that you were able to have on charity?
Totally. Yeah. Well, it was really cool because Humble Bundle approached us and we were sort of talking, you know, like, oh, maybe it'd be good to try and get into a bundle. And they approached us with the idea of sort of headlining one, which was amazing. Like just to get in front of that audience of people, it really, we have data that shows that it was a completely different audience to the kind of people who were buying Frozen Synapse already, say on Steam or through other distributors. So it kind of opened us up to a bit more of a, not necessarily a mass market, but a bigger indie game market. And yeah, it went really well and it was fantastic to be able to support both, Child's Play and the EFF, who both do a lot of good things. So it was really, really good to have that kind of charity impact as well. I think it's just absolutely fantastic. You know, you work to build up a business, but, when you get a chance to be focused on something that isn't purely commercial, obviously there's, you know, a big commercial motivation to do a Humble Bundle, but equally there is this benefit that you can derive from having done something that gets a bit popular, you can support good things. So it was just an all-round win, really. It was really cool. And yeah, we enjoyed working with the Humble Bundle guys, and we hope to do something else in future with them.
Awesome. I've purchased all of them. That's actually where I got your game. I was one of the new pieces of data or new data points.
Yeah, that's right.
That you're talking about. So very cool. Excellent. Well, Paul, let's get into the stuff that I actually really wanted to really talk to you about. I want to talk about your music. You are an incredible chiptune artist, and the first question that I want to ask you is, am I saying your brand name project correctly, Ensnare?
Yeah, Ensnare. That name actually came from, I started watching a huge amount of competitive StarCraft 2. This is the nerdiest thing anyone will ever say to you. I was watching a load of StarCraft 2, and the first match I watched had this guy, a player called OGS Ensnare, in it, and I just thought that was such a cool name. Yeah, I wanted to do this side project. And on my first album, pretty much all the track names are sort of related to StarCraft in some way. So I thought it'd be good to have a StarCraft homage name. So, sorry for taking your name, Mr. Internet. I hope you don't mind me using it.
Well, you've done a good job with it, so it hasn't gone to waste, that's for sure. How would you describe the music that you make? I have my own description, but I want to give the artist a little bit of a chance to describe the type of music that you make.
Sure. So I'll kind of deal with the fact that I do music under two names. The first artist name I use is Nervous Test Pilot, and that's something that's been going for a really long time. I've been doing Nervous Test Pilot music since I was 14, and I did the Frozen Synapse soundtrack under that name, and that's for basically electronic music, which encompasses everything. You know, I don't set myself any limits with it. I don't really define anything sort of genre-wise with it. It tends to be sort of dance-related, but that's just my kind of main electronica project. Whereas Ensnare was started just to see kind of what is the minimum I have to do to make a track, sort of try to give myself really harsh limits. I pretty much only use sounds that derive from old-style sound chips, like the Game Boy DMG internal sound chip and, Atari-based sound chips as well. I use a program called Plogue Chip Sounds for most of that stuff. And it's what the chiptune community would describe as fake bit, because it's not really using just original hardware. And some of them are quite hardcore about that. So yeah, I have this kind of split personality. And then Snare was, just about sort of fun and making dance music with really, really cheap lo-fi elements and seeing where I could take it.
So you closed out BitFlip Festival in Australia. Can you describe it to us and like your experience and how you got involved?
Sure. It was kind of, I'm not sure I can describe it because it was fairly crazy, but I just got contacted. I mean, I'd been sending music to a guy called BitShifter, who is one of the original US-based Game Boy musicians. He's an absolute...
Yeah, I like BitShifter. I'm very familiar with him. He reminds me of like a square pusher almost.
Yeah, he's got some, I mean, he's amazing because his music is so melodic, but also so technically advanced. Like, he's invented some of the modern techniques that people are using on Game Boys. And so I actually met him in 2007 when I was playing at a festival in France. And I've been sending him music for a while. And I think what happened is that he passed it around a few people and notified the guys in Australia, and they decided to book me. So they actually mailed me while I was out in Vegas at Minecon, which is a very surreal place to get a chiptune booking in Australia. I'm like, so my life just consists of travel now. So yeah, I was there in my hotel room at Minecon and I got this and I was like, wow, I have to figure out a way of, you know, getting out there and doing this festival because it's kind of a unique opportunity, and somehow managed to fit it in. And ended up closing out the whole thing. I think they wanted a kind of dancey act to close it out. I mean, there was actually a sort of secret performance by a guy called Cetrix after me, who's a local Australian, like, chip dance music dude, and he was absolutely fantastic. So I was like the formal closing act, but he sneaked in after me and did some amazing crazy acid stuff, which was awesome.
Oh, cool. So you can always play the humble piece of, well, I didn't really close.
No, I'm not going to do that because I was definitely the closer. Chris Cetrix sneaked on after me with, he's the guy who invented this thing called the Guitari, which is an Atari strapped to like a guitar frame that has sort of all these guitar pedals and things on it. But it wasn't functioning, unfortunately, at the festival. But there's videos of that if you check on YouTube for the Guitari, it's quite a majestic thing.
Yeah, I actually saw some pictures of that. So we'll have to post some of those on the show notes links. Yeah, because it's really a cool. It reminds me of like a kid's like keytar. He looks like a little kid playing this big giant toy.
There's that video of him just like totally rocking out at Blip Tokyo with this thing. It's just hilarious. So he was an amazingly awesome guy. He was doing all the video recording and like live visual mixing and stuff for the night as well. And he just like puts loads and loads of his time in voluntarily to all these events. Cetrix, he's an awesome dude.
Very, very cool. Well, so now that we've talked about you as a game developer and you as a musician, do you consider yourself a game maker who's a musician, or a musician who makes games, or have you not even ever considered a definition or anything like that?
I don't really know anymore, because like I say, I got into game development through music, and you know, Ian is the guy who really kind of is the creative hub of our projects at Mode 7. He is the creative sort of mastermind there, so he's the real game developer, and I just kind of am along for the ride and like fill in all the gaps and make sure the business runs okay and all that sort of thing. So music is something that I can do completely myself and have full creative control over. And I just kind of, those two things work around each other. And through doing Frozen Synapse, my music has come to a huge new audience, which is always the plan anyway. I always felt I would be more successful working in games as opposed to just being a pure musician, because there's so many people trying to do that. And the level of dedication you have to have is insane. So this is like a sort of backdoor route for me, really.
So are there any differences between making music for an album versus a game? Like, are they similar or are they very different?
They're quite different because you really need to be kind of in synergy with what the game is doing. With Frozen Synapse, I was trying to sort of really score the atmosphere of the game, and I'd always like check my music against artwork, and then we had the game. I'd be playing the game a lot sort of around the time I was writing. So I think it's a lot harder to just write music for a game as opposed to, you know, just create anything you want. But it's, you know, it's really exciting once you get that kind of music meshing with the game to create this more total experience. It's really, really fascinating and exciting thing to do, but definitely like loads and loads of additional challenges there.
Awesome. Now, the last thing that we want to cover with you is what are maybe your favorite tracks, or what's the favorite track that you've made so far, and why? It doesn't even necessarily have to be your best, but one that's your favorite for any particular reason.
There's one on the FF soundtrack which is called Concentrate, which is one that I made fairly late on. And that was a kind of, like, I've been listening to loads of Radiohead again for some reason. I have absolutely no idea why.
I can tell that you listen with the chord structure that you put together in a lot of In the Snare.
Right.
You use a very melodic tone, but you have a very rich sort of chord structure.
Yeah, I really like chords, and so do Radiohead. So
yeah, exactly, and do a good job of mixing it. And I didn't, being in England and Radiohead being as popular as they are, I didn't want to say, "Oh, you remind me of Radiohead." You go, "No, man, I was not trying to do that."
Oh, that's cool. No, it's a good. It's flattered by the comparison, obviously, but just kind of, yeah, I wanted to do something a bit moodier and a bit more emotive, and that track really worked. And I sort of tried to do something else similar to it, and I couldn't really get it again. So when you have something that's quite unique like that, I think, you know, you have a certain affinity for it. So yeah, Concentrate. In terms of Ensnare, there's a track that I did on the last album, Binary Opposition, which was a joint album with an artist called M. Pegasus. Mm-hmm. And the track called Ask Me Anything, which pretty recently, and that's got a really great response, and I've been really happy with that one.
Ask Me Anything has a very happy tone to it.
It's
in the middle of winter right now here in Ohio, and it's snowy, and I honestly, I put the song in, or I play it, and I immediately am in the middle of June. it really is a happy, nice song. I like it. And Computer Run on the track that you have on Ensnare is the one that was reminding me the most of the rich chord structure, as far as something of like The Reckoning from Radiohead. A Reckoner, maybe, is the song? I forget the name of it.
Yeah, no, that one was sort of a bit more electronica influence. Some of my influences were kind of 90s electronica, like Plaid and Boards of Canada and those kind of acts. So yeah, Computer Run's named after a really old computer store in my hometown that closed down, so it's kind of about computer nostalgia.
Good deal. Well, that pretty much takes care of all the questions that I had. Dustin, has anything else come up that you wanted to ask Paul?
No.
No? All right.
No, we're done here.
No, it's just you're a great interview, man.
You just set me going and I'll talk forever. Yeah.
Well, that's what we need as interviewers. We need to plant a little seed and let you go. So
awesome.
Well, Paul, thank you very much for coming on the show. What would be the best way for people to follow your music, as well as what's going on with Mode 7?
So probably the best way right now is to follow me on Twitter, and I'm just Mode 7 Games on Twitter, Mode number 7 Games. And also there's an Ensnare site at ensnare8bit.blogspot.com. All of those things are really hard to say. So yeah, go to the Ensnare site to check out my chiptune. But, yeah, just follow me on Twitter. And of course, frozensynapse.com for the game. You can get the soundtrack from there as well.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, Paul, thanks again for coming on, and we will be right back to, finish up episode 82. All right, everyone, and we are back. Paul, thanks again for coming on the show. I hope everyone enjoyed the track that I played, Top 5 Control, actually coming out of the interview. So let's get to some email, Dustin. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Now, the first bit of mail, I have to apologize. I'm not sure if I'm authorized to read it or not, so sorry. But my buddy Matt sent me some really cool emails. So we're going to read through some of these on air. I'll summarize a little bit, but it was really, really awesome to hear from him. And gosh, he's got so much information. It's awesome. So he wanted to confirm that Drew Karpyshyn, a writer of Star Wars novels as well as Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2, did work as a senior writer on Star Wars: The Old Republic. And that was something that Gooch and I were asking ourselves on episode 79, I believe, is we were wondering about the writing with the Old Republic. He also writes in and mentions about our definition of a JRPG. Remember we were trying to figure that out?
Yeah.
He basically, in his opinion, is looking at things as a menu-based combat system, not necessarily turn-based, mm-hmm. You know, because of games like Chrono Trigger and especially like Resonance of Fate. Those are menu-based combat systems and not necessarily turn-based, since there's like reaction times and stuff like that in there.
Yeah.
And then also he says, you know, it focuses on a small band of characters that travel together in a world-scattering threat, as well as you gain levels and buy equipment and items. So it's pretty cool. I like the way that he defined that for me, a menu-based combat system, because I've always called it turn-based, and I've never felt that was 100% right.
Yeah.
So I like the wording of that better. He really liked the song Corridors of Time that Laura by Spruik made. That song is awesome. I love it. So, Matt, I'm glad that you liked it. Just for the heck of it, he's going to throw in a potential disappointment game as Guild Wars 2. He says that they've got a really good chance to break the MMO mold. But it's a very risky and innovative approach. So he's hoping that there's a focus on mobility, and he's hoping that a focus on mobility and positioning adds as what the genre needs to kind of revolutionize it. And then also, he wants to recommend that we try out an iPad game called Osmos. Have you ever played that?
I have not.
Nope. So me either. He says it's kind of like a Tetris-based or Tetris-style game, so... I'll definitely have to look into seeing if they have an Android version of that. I don't know. I think Gooch might be the only one with an Apple device right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And then also, he writes in about episode 80, which is awesome. He wants to talk about the Dota versus Dota topic, and it's one that he's really familiar with this. Matt's been a PC gamer since I can remember, since we were little kids, so. He says that Blizzard is filing against Valve to keep the term Dota in public domain. The Dota, or MOBA, game style is a bit of a cross between RTS and ARPG. The original developers of Dota formed their own team, Dota All-Stars LLC, and they filed for trademark. Blizzard bought out Dota All-Stars LLC from Riot and is continuing the suit. Blizzard Dota is an in-house custom map development for StarCraft 2 and will not be sold. Microtransactions for additional content may be used at a point later in time. So in general, the greedy corporation bad guy, and this is actually Valve, but a lot of misinformation is being spread online by gamers quoting one another's inaccurate information. One article I read stated Dota stood for Day of the Ancients instead of Defense of the Ancients. We'll see what comes of this. I guess though, if Valve wins, it could mean that Dota, the original name, could be taken, down for good. So, he's got some interesting articles there. I will post those in the show notes. And, Matt, thanks a lot for listening. It's so cool to have a friend of mine that I grew up playing games with actually listen. It's bizarre. So, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Well, I'm just used to strangers listening.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that big of a deal. It's when somebody that I know listens, it's strange. I don't know. So, what do we have, next on the mail slot?
Tecmo Balls wrote in a comment on episode 81 and said, "Hey guys, where's Tony been?" And long story short, he's just been busy.
Yeah, he is taking more of a the podcast is hard for him. He can't take the big chunk of time that we take to do it. When it comes to making videos, he can kind of work here and there whenever he can find time. So yeah, his schedule just has not allowed him to fit in. But we've been picking on him pretty good. I think he'll be back pretty soon, don't you think?
Yeah.
So I think he's feeling a little bad.
And then he goes on and says, "Question: has there ever been a game you didn't care to play but rather preferred to watch a friend play? I can remember doing this with Resident Evil on PlayStation, Dragon Warrior on NES, GTA 3 on PlayStation 2. With all these games, I preferred to just watch a friend play through rather than man the controls. Equal enjoyment for all. Haven't wrote in since before the merger, so just want to let you know I'm still listening."
I'm very, very glad that you are, man. And yeah.
Super glad that you're commenting. We love comments.
Yeah, well, of course. I guess, man, I don't know if I've ever – I can't necessarily think of a game that I enjoyed watching someone else play, but I definitely would have. I really enjoy the game trailers, retrospectives, or any retrospectives on series that are really popular, that are RPG-based. Yeah. I like fantasy kind of stories. I don't get real into them, but they certainly are worth paying attention to. And since I don't have the time to get into the all the RPGs, and I'd like to check out some of the story, I like to watch any retrospective or mini documentary on game series. I think that's kind of similar to what he's saying.
Yeah. For myself, pretty much anything. I love watching like YouTube videos on pretty much any game, even if I play through it myself, as long as the person is better at it than I am or equally as good. Like, yeah. if someone is playing a game and they don't know how to play it, it drives me nuts.
I've done that to a few people online, like my Bang.io review. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. And there's a few people that are commenting like, "Dude, what are you doing?" It's like, trying to get a review out quickly. That's what I was doing. I'm sorry. Good stuff. So, yeah, Tecmo Balls. I like to watch people online play, but never, as much in person. I think I would have enjoyed Friends, but I was kind of a jerk big brother. So I wonder if my brother enjoyed watching me play games. I'll have to ask him, cause he didn't have to do that. So, yeah, very cool. Well, Dustin, that's pretty much it for the week. Do you have anything else that you wanted to add? Oh, no, we didn't talk about YouTube.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about the YouTube highlights for the week.
For our YouTube highlights, we had on our channel, youtube.com/user/classiclite, you can see episodes 1 and 2 of Max HP, where we talk about Resonance of Fate. And we do that on top of gameplay footage captured by Tony, and we got about 20 minutes worth of material up now. Or no, yeah. Excuse me, 40 minutes of material, 2 episodes, 20 minutes per. Also, you can see my Potion Master gameplay review. And then, let's see, Tony threw up his PS Vita unboxing.
Yes.
Which is blowing up pretty good.
Yeah, it's doing well. It was a really helpful video too, for a lot of gamers out there.
Yeah.
There was a quirky little thing if you bought the bundle that Tony did, and Tony was really helpful with a lot of people, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, he did a separate video just on how to redeem your 3G, didn't he?
Yeah, yep, because he was getting so many comments and questions about it. Oh, and a funny YouTube thing that I don't need to bring up, but I want to. On my Kobe video I did of the tablet review, mm-hmm. There's a mini flame war started between fangirls of one of the actors from Hannah Montana and one of the guys from Twilight. Yeah, out of nowhere, somebody just commented, "I sound like Mitchell Musso." So I Google who Mitchell Musso is, and I'm like, oh, okay, he's a Hannah Montana actor. So I was like, all right, I sound like a Disney Channel guy, whatever. And then, I don't know, like a week or so later, I see this really weird comment about, like, I will puke your picture or something like that. And I'm like, what is going on? So there are these, like, I'm just picturing, like, 14-year-old girls, like, in the middle of people asking me, like, questions like, hey, is this compatible with Honeycomb or, you know, does this have this kind of browser or something like that? These people are like, Mitchell Musso is so ugly and Taylor Lautner is so hot. And, like... And one of them is kind of like a threatening, like, bring it if you really think Mitchell Musso is hotter. And it's like, oh, man, this is great.
I love the internet.
It's really, really great. I mean, that can show up on a tablet review.
Yeah.
That, and I was even trying to see, like, what in the world could have made this person think of Hannah Montana. And I couldn't think of anything because – the music I play is inverse phase, right? That's flat out chiptune music, and I'm pretty sure it was Metroid. So there's not going to be any Disney Channel relation there. The video game that I showed was Plants vs. Zombies, so I don't know. And then I showed like some browsing of like ESPN and stuff. So yeah, I don't even know who would have found that comment. Like someone must be just searching like for Mitchell Musso comments. So. Anyways, I want to thank both of you for arguing on my post. I believe it's contributed to some hits. So, yeah, the internet's great. All right, well, is that it then? Do we have anything else that showed up on YouTube that we should pay attention to?
I think that is that.
So, all right, well, just want to give a quick partner shout out. The hardware that we use to produce our content has been provided by Doghouse Systems. Again, remember to level up at doghousesystems.com. Hapag, as well as AverMedia, both excellent companies providing high-quality capture devices. Our games are sponsored by GamersGate.com, J2Games.com, OnLive, and, of course, Gamer here in Findlay, Ohio. Some sites to check us out on, still glitched out, GotGame.com, GameFire, ReviewZoneHD, Yoush.com. And just want to give a shout out to the Retro League has been pumping out episodes like crazy lately. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, they have. They used to be kind of slow going, but they're just knocking them out nowadays.
Yeah, which is killer.
Yeah.
And I want to say what's up to Kevin over at the Paranerds as well. I just found the Giant Bombcast today. I never had really given them much of a shot before. Their podcast is awesome. Have you ever listened to the Bombcast?
Yeah, I usually, this is going to sound weird, but I usually go to sleep to them. Like I'll put my iPod in and it's just something for me to kind of zone out to while I fall asleep.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's boring. I don't want to give the wrong idea, but yeah.
No, I can actually, I love to fall asleep listening to podcasts, mm-hmm. but I can only fall asleep listening to a good podcast.
Yeah.
My favorite is, Exploration from Michio Kaku. He's a professor of physics and has some really, it's a really cool science podcast. And don't take it the wrong way, Chewy, but the Manipool also. I love listening to the Manipool when I go to sleep.
Well, see, now we're gonna have a flame war on our website about who's better, Michio Kaku or Neil's, DeGrasse Tyson, the other physicist that's always on the Discovery Channel.
It's Michio Kaku, obviously. I will participate in that flame war. Team Kaku. So, anyways, we want to thank everyone very much for listening to the show this week, and hopefully you listen to that little tangent there. That was fun to get off on. So, I guess we will see everybody next week for episode 83, where we'll be interviewing Epic Vessel Games. And thanks again, Paul. You're a super cool guy. You make some really good music, and Mode 7 makes some great games. So thanks for coming on, and we'll see you guys next week for episode 83.